Hi, I'm Erin Lundy.
And I'm Madeline Walden, and this is
Aquarium of the Podcific,
a podcast brought to you by Aquarium of the Pacific, Southern California's largest aquarium.
Join us as we learn alongside the experts in animal care, conservation, and more.
Welcome back to Aquarium of the Podcific.
I'm Erin Lundy, Conservation Coordinator for Mammals and Birds and Animal Care Specialist.
And I'm Madeline Walden, the aquarium's Digital Content and Community Manager. Today, we are learning all about diving at the aquarium. Erin, have you ever dove at the aquarium before?
Yeah. It historically was part of my job. Mm-hmm. Not as much recently. The frog habitats tend not to be...
You don't have to dive in the frog habitats.
They tend not to be deep enough to need that. But when I was primarily a marine mammal
mammalogist.
Yeah, when I was a mammalogist and I primarily took care of our marine mammal collection, one of the things that people don't realize is that diving is how we clean their house.
Yeah.
And we have a vacuum, like an underwater vacuum, for vacuuming up all the things that are...
That needed to be vacuumed.
Food goes in, food comes out.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the best thing about diving in with our seals and sea lions, other than getting a chance to see how massive they look underwater... And sometimes you get to find their little whiskers, and it's really cute.
Oh!
They have really cute whiskers.
That is precious.
Harbor seal whiskers, when you find them, are different than California sea lion whiskers. California sea lion whiskers look like a spaghetti, like a dry spaghetti. But harbor seal whiskers are the cutest things ever because they have this spiral structure all around, and that makes them more sensitive to water currents flowing over them and helps them understand their surroundings. So that's the best part about diving in with the seals and sea lions. But
treasure.
Yeah, all the treasure you find within the poop.
That's awesome. Well, I am currently in the process of learning how to scuba dive, and I'm really excited to get into our exhibits because it seems so magical. I can't wait.
I haven't been in a lot of our exhibits. Mm-hmm. I've been in our sea otter habitat. I've been in penguins. I've been in our seals and sea lions. But our DSO, Rachel, gets to do all of it and then some, and then also gets to teach people how to dive in all of those different habitats. So... Madeline's scuba certification is going to allow us to do TikToks from inside and see fish real
I'm
up
so
close
excited.
And personal.
I can't wait.
Rachel is our dive safety officer, also known as a DSO, and she's worked at the aquarium for quite some time, and we're very lucky to have her. It is not easy diving. Diving is super technical, can be dangerous.
So much safety protocols that she has to manage and really be thinking about the entire time that she's working, and probably when she's not working, honestly.
Who doesn't think
a lot
about
of brain space
when they're not working? But she is wonderful, and she is one of the most enthusiastic and sweet DSOs that we could ever ask for. So without further ado, let's have Rachel on.
Hi, Rachel. Thank you so much for joining us on the podcast today.
Hi. Good afternoon. So happy to be here.
Yay. Can you tell us a little bit about your job here at the aquarium? How long have you been here?
Yeah.
What do you do?
So I am the dive safety officer of aquarium operations. I have been here for about 11 and a half years.
Wow. Really?
Yes. So I started when I was 20 years old, and I remember getting the call that I got the job, and I laid back on my bed and I thought all of my worries that I've ever had in my life were solved because I got a job in scuba diving, which is kind of a hard thing to do. You know, it's a luxury sport. It's super fun. You know, everybody wants to, you know, scuba dive at the Aquarium of the Pacific.
Yeah. Get paid to do it. Even.
You know, and get paid to do it. And so That's what I do. But more so, actually, I manage all the people that are diving at the Aquarium of the Pacific. I don't actually get in the water as much as I would like to, but I certainly do get in to do some trainings or to do some fun stuff or some special events. But mainly what I'm in charge of is making sure that the dive program is being conducted in a safe manner, that all of the equipment is safe and in good condition and looks nice and pretty. And I onboard all of the volunteer scuba divers and manage all of the diving that goes on day to day in the exhibits. I'm one of a team of six people that are all paid employees, and everybody else that you see that's diving in the exhibits, they either staff members and aquarists or volunteers.
Yeah. That's awesome. Well, let's talk a little bit about your career or just your life before the aquarium. How long have you been diving for?
So I'm super lucky. I grew up locally here. I grew up like in Seal Beach. And my dad got me into scuba diving right when I turned 12 years old. Which is the absolute youngest you can possibly be. I knew that I wanted to breathe underwater ever since I had a mermaid Barbie. You know, and scuba diver Barbie in the bathtub or what have you.
Love it.
And so I grew up going to Catalina with my family. family and snorkeling in that super, super cold water. And all I really wanted to do was fly underneath the surface. And so I got certified on my 12th birthday.
So cute.
It was so fun. Cool. And since then, I've had some additional trainings. I did an ROP class in high school as a senior, where I got to go to a different high school and get some more scuba training.
What's ROP?
Yeah, what is that?
ROP. I think, what does it stand for? It's like an extracurricular class. Okay. It allowed me to get a pathway cord in high school.
Oh, very
that's a thing.
Cool.
So I got a marine biology pathway cord. Mm-hmm. And so then I went to school. I went to school at Cal State Long Beach. Mm-hmm. I got my degree in marine biology, my bachelor of science. And all the while, I started working here when I was 20. And so all of my previous dive training kind of came in my teen years. And then all of the more additional training that I've gotten, like dive master and instructor, has been while I've been here at the aquarium. Mm-hmm. So my experience diving for a long time, as well as I was a junior lifeguard, so I spent a lot of time in the ocean before, really helped me get the job, the initial administration job here for the dive program. Mm-hmm. And then I've been growing and crawling up the ladder very slowly ever since.
Swimming up the ladder.
Yeah,
swimming up the ladder.
You know, I was thinking about a little crab, you know, going up the ladder, and then a big wave comes, and we call that COVID.
Yeah,
takes you down to the bottom rock, right?
No. And you start all over.
Start all over.
It's funny that I was like, oh, real life mermaid, and you're like, I'm a little crab crawling.
That's
I'm
the
just
vibe.
Working my way up there.
Can you kind of give a rundown on what is a dive master? What are kind of the levels that you have to go through to get to where you are now?
Okay, yeah, no, great question. So if you've never been scuba diving before, you can get yourself in the water in two ways. You can try something called like a Discover Dive, where you go to a dive shop and say, hey, I want you to take me scuba diving. I just want to get underwater in the ocean as quickly as I can. And they'll teach you how to do it, and you can do it one time. If you want to be able to do it yourself when you go on vacation somewhere else, it's like, I know how to do this and I want to do it here, then you would need a certification. The first level is an open water diver certification. It takes about 2 to 3 weeks. There's some pool work, there's some ocean work, and you're going to get that done with with an instructor that's at a dive shop near you somewhere. Mm-hmm. And dive shops are everywhere. They're not only near the ocean. They're definitely inland as well. So
really? Cool.
Yeah, so just Google a dive shop. Near you, and there will be an instructor that can teach you something. So once you get your basic open water certification, that is by far the hardest part. You also don't need to own your own gear in order to get that certification. You can rent the gear. I highly recommend it, because not only is the gear expensive, storing it is even more expensive.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so
it's kind of delicate too, right?
Yeah, so yeah. You know, it's
you
just
don't
like,
really want to have to maintain it.
You don't want to buy your own gear until you love doing this and you're doing it every month, you know? Mm-hmm. And so so you rent the gear, get yourself open water certified. And if you do truly love it, there are tons of dive clubs that are just, you know, recreational people that want to go diving and figure out when they can all find a time to do it. And so that's how you find your dive buddies, because you never want to go diving alone.
Very important.
After that, there are a couple other levels. There's an advanced diver, which you do, I believe it's like 5 specialty dives, where you do like a night diving or navigation or boat diving, just more specialty things that make you an advanced. That usually takes about 1 weekend. Then you take another weekend and you can get your rescue diver certification, which teaches you not only how to rescue someone from the water, but more importantly, how to think so that you prevent a rescue from ever needing to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a lot of just situational awareness training. So that's a rescue diver certification. That is the certification that is required for all of our volunteer divers. So it's technically the third level of certification.
Mm-hmm.
But the first one always takes the most amount of time, energy, and effort, was the open water one.
Mm-hmm.
So after you get your rescue diver certification, you can become a professional level diver, which means you become what they call a dive master.
Ooh, master.
Yeah, dive master. You know, which isn't to be confused with master diver.
Oh, that is confusing.
Isn't that so darn confusing?
Yeah.
So a master diver is a certification. It's kind of like an advanced diver.
Okay.
But even better.
Okay.
And so it's like someone who's like good at like researching and doing this, doing that. A dive master is different, because it's somebody that's overseeing other divers.
Got it.
You're seen as kind of like a leader. So that's what we call when the dive world splits off into professional level diving versus just recreational. A master scuba diver, which is more kind of recreational, who's like got lots of skills.
Okay.
a dive master is someone that can oversee new students that aren't yet certified. And dive masters usually help instructors, which is the next level, certify students. So they're at the very top level there is the instructor. Their assistant is usually a dive master. Dive masters are also responsible for taking certified divers into environments that they haven't been before. Mm-hmm. So let's say it's like a new dive site on Palau or something. Mm-hmm. You'd want to hire a dive master to take you because you've never been before. And that's just, we learned in our rescue class, not safe to do.
Yeah, really. Mm-hmm. I think that people don't always get that diving is this incredibly technical thing that requires so much training and so much equipment. And although a lot of it, I'm sure, comes naturally to you now, there's a lot of work that goes into receiving your dive certification. And I remember I had to go through all of that when I was getting hired at the aquarium. Pod Civic listeners, I didn't actually have my dive certification when I applied, and I said that I did. And then they asked me for an interview, and I had to get it really fast. And I don't think even my boss knows that, so I'm sorry if
you're listening to that. It's confession time on Pod Civic.
I was very fortunate in that I had a very close friend of mine who was a dive instructor and was like, we'll get you, like, it'll be fine. Just apply for the job, and if it comes up, we'll do it really fast. Mm-hmm. And so I was able to get my certification. But it still took me a couple of weeks, and then just getting my like little certification card took a while, and they asked for a copy of it, and I was like, just give me a
I guess I have that dated today.
Have it, yeah. And definitely the date on it.
I have been in the ocean before.
So everyone who is wondering, I actually got certified specifically for this job. And if you work at the aquarium, you actually have to have at least an open water certification, right?
Yeah. If you work with animals or you're working in the animals
department. No, you need it too.
Oh, no. Oh, no. How did I get this job?
You are open water certified now.
Right? I'm getting there. I'm close.
You're working on it.
I'm working on it. Awesome. I'm working on it.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I'm really excited.
She's doing great.
That's awesome. Are you helping her with it?
You know, I saw her. I didn't actually do any of the instructing or dive mastering. I was just a bystander watching. And she's an all-star. You can really tell. There are some people that are meant to scuba dive.
Yeah.
And some people that are just better on land.
I mean, a water sign.
I am a better on land person, but it was required for this job. So I am like a little recently morphed tadpole to frog where I'm just like, I don't
not
understand. No, I'm not a crab. Rachel's a crab climbing up the ladder. I am the useless half frog, half tadpole that's still figuring
somewhere
it out.
Somewhere in between.
Yeah. You're just like, am I land? Am I water? I don't really know.
You're in the middle of your evolution.
Yeah. I'm working on it. Don't worry about it. But, so, I mean, it takes a lot of work to get certified for diving, and it definitely can be really dangerous, too. Like, what aspects of your job sort of involve safety? You're a dive safety officer. What does that mean in terms of keeping everyone safe?
A lot of people, when they look at the aquarium, they think that it's just one big pool.
Mm-hmm.
How dangerous could it possibly be diving in a pool? I mean, in the ocean, obviously, it's dangerous. But even when you're training, you go into a pool. Mm-hmm. Well, first, I like to correct people and tell them, imagine it's more of a jacuzzi instead of a pool because there are so many darn jets that are pumping water down there that you're getting pushed from one side of the exhibit to the other. So it feels a little bit more like diving in a jacuzzi. Mm-hmm. There's glass structures. There's overhead environment. There's acrylic glass that's easily scratched by our scuba tanks. There's some overhead environments. There are animals that are that behave uniquely because they are
unique.
You know, here. They're unique.
They're unique animals. Yeah.
They're unique and they are not scared of you when you're the one who's been feeding them for the past several years. And so all of that, really comes into play. It's because a lot of what we're doing isn't just hanging out in the water waving at people.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the time, 9 times out of 10, we have a plethora of tasks that we're doing that we're thinking about. Our number one most important task being to make sure that we're checking on our buddy the entire time that we're diving here. Our average age of dive volunteer is over the age of 40. And they're underwater quite a bit. I mean, last year pre-pandemic, we were logging over 20,000 dives a year.
Wow.
And so if you think about that, the sheer amount of time people are underwater and doing hard tasks like cleaning and feeding and watching their buddy and kicking around against the current, there's just a lot of little things that when added together could create a big problem. And so it's my job to make sure that those little things are managed effectively. We can't prevent all potential dangers from happening, but we can see how they add up. We can have like super situational global awareness and see just what are all the little aspects that can make something go wrong on a dive, even down to, is someone a bit congested today? You know, when I'm talking to one of the dive volunteers, mm-hmm. do they sound congested? Does that mean that one of them is going to blow their eardrum because they're not being able to clear their ears underwater because mm-hmm. of the pressure? Maybe. That's yeah. part of the safety, you know, yeah. and that's safety even right there. So it's being aware of the things we know that are happening, things that might not be a big deal but are little, but it's all of those kind of little things that create a big problem that we try to figure out how we can nip in the butt.
Yeah. Our dive program seems extremely well organized, and on the back of every exhibit that is approved for diving, there's a dive plan that says, hey, these are the approved dive plans for this exhibit. And it is very specific, and it is for every single exhibit that is diveable.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I just saw our new DSO checking out all of those dive plans the other day and getting familiar with them, because there is so much that goes into keeping things organized and safe and making sure people are doing the things that they're supposed to. And so I can't imagine how much thought and structure mm-hmm. goes into creating something like that. So
yeah.
thank you.
Yeah. I know. It's got to be so much work and so much, you know, mental checklists that you're constantly keeping track of.
Bill, there's over 50 exhibits that we dive in.
Wow.
And so, and you'll see the dive officers, we're constantly walking around looking at things. People laugh at me. They say, you know, a lot of people laugh and say that I'm always staring at a wall. They're like, I never know what you're looking at. Just your hands are on your hips and you're staring at the wall. Just what are you thinking about? And most of the time I'm thinking about how would I get someone out of this situation mm-hmm. if they needed it to happen. Mm-hmm. You know, if just for some reason today was that person's day that they needed help, how would I get them out of this exhibit? How would I get them up onto that rock?
I like that you said that, because I will say, like, you are a very outgoing personality, very extroverted. I see you around the aquarium. You're always willing to chat. But there are sometimes I see you very, like, hyper-focused. And I see you, like,
staring at a wall.
And I'll be like, hey, Rachel. And you'll be like, hey. And, like, you're in it. And that's your job, you mm-hmm. know, is it's doing that mental work and, like, making sure, like, you know, I have to look at this exhibit and consider all opportunities right. and all, you know, all ways that
yeah.
you know, anything could happen. And how would we respond to that?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, even the other day you were I was recording our TikTok in the drop tunnel. So, you know, just looking ridiculous. And Rachel comes in and she's trying to get the attention of one of the divers. And there's, you know, a communication back and forth that
yes.
you guys have. You have hand signals. You have, you know, things that you need to get done in the exhibit. They're trying to communicate, you know, on dry land versus. So, like, it's very focused. And it's got to be – it's a lot of work.
Yeah, it's funny you say that, because that's where my extrovertedness really comes out, is when I'm trying to communicate to a diver behind the glass.
Mm-hmm.
You know, trying to get their attention, first of all. You know, you don't want to slam on – you don't want to pound on the
yeah,
glass.
No.
You don't really hear it anyway once you're in there.
Yeah.
Like, unless your head is right next to the glass, you really don't hear anything. And so trying to do jumping jacks or whatever, or, you know, whip my blonde hair around just to be kind of confusing. I've since stopped doing so much of that, because I have learned in my job how to be better at being patient and just telling them the information mm-hmm. that they need them to know
mm-hmm.
later.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big learning curve for me
sure.
is that they don't need to know everything right now. Let's
yeah.
just talk about it next time.
That's,
so,
that's great.
But yeah, talking to them and getting their attention by doing the jumping jacks and trying to figure out some kind of hand signal to tell them, please don't clean that one coral.
Yeah.
I want the coral that's two inches away from it clean,
yeah.
not that one. And so how to find the hand signals to communicate that
yeah.
can be kind of challenging.
Absolutely. Well, there's a lot of exhibits here, and there's a lot of divers and volunteer divers. But for you, what exhibits have you dived in? And out of all of our exhibits, what's your favorite?
I've dove in most of the exhibits. I actually haven't dove in all of them. That
oh,
has
really?
Always been something on my list. Like, dive every
missing?
Single.
Yeah. yeah.
You know, the Surge West channel. The Surge Yay. West.
Surge East done.
What?
Surge East.
Surge East is done, but the Surge West, the one, the far one in the Surge. And that's mm-hmm. the one that I'm always staring at, thinking, how was I get anybody out of that one?
Have you been in Hellbenders? Because that one needs to be dove.
I think, is that only like 3 feet deep?
Yeah, okay. It's probably a stand-up
meridian
right, stand situation.
Up one. Oh, gosh. No, I'm excited to get in. I'm really excited to get in some of the new exhibits.
Oh, yeah.
That are going to be opening in the Southern California Baja Gallery.
Mm-hmm.
I cannot wait seeing some of those behind the scenes. I'm just like, get me in there.
Yeah,
I'm
so excited.
Cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
On an upcoming episode, we're going to talk about our new gallery. I'm really excited to dive in.
I just spent like half an hour to an hour this morning helping put sand in one of our new eelgrass tanks.
Oh, yes.
Really cool tank. So that'll be really fun to see. And I'm sure it'll be fun to dive because it's so long that
long
you get
and flat.
To kind of swim. Yeah.
I know.
Really
it'd
nice.
Be great. let's see. What other ones have I not been in? I can tell you probably my least favorite one is, unfortunately, probably the penguins, just because the smell lingers. If you don't If you don't wear a full face mask and it's the wrong time of year, you get that water up your nose and you smell penguin for the next 2 days.
Yeah. And when they're molting too.
That's what I'm
talking
about. Probably
the time of year, which is about to happen. We talked a little bit about that in the penguin episode.
Really? Okay, so I really got to not dive in there then. That's going to happen.
They get real stinky real quick because they're not going in the water very often.
Yeah, they get stinky. But the water gets stinky, apparently. So that scent has stuck with me for a while just because I couldn't figure out how to get it out of my nasal cavity.
Have you been in there since we redid that exhibit?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, I haven't actually been underwater yet.
I think they made some modifications to make it more dive friendly. Like they did. Specifically.
Less stinky.
Maybe not. Maybe
same amount of stinky.
Same amount of stinky, less slippery.
But the idea of like, you know, when we were redesigning an exhibit, how can we incorporate things that make it safer for people who have to get in and out of the water? And I actually loved that was a pretty big consideration when they were doing it.
It's huge. It's such a big deal, you know? Mm-hmm. So yes, probably penguins is my least favorite, but my my most favorite, which, you know, but I the penguins are cute. I wish they would come up to me and love on me a little bit more.
Yeah, they just kind of stay away. I think
but
that
they
makes
stay
it less
away.
Fun.
And so therefore I feel like I'm the stinky one instead of them being the stinky one. So I don't get any loving and I leave stinky. It's a lose-lose
for
me.
There's penguins 30 feet away from me and I smell terrible.
This is not ideal.
That's so funny.
So my favorite one has got to be Blue Cavern though, because I mean, diving inside a building, diving in a two-story exhibit inside a building is pretty awesome because, you know, it was funny you said earlier that, you know, people are like, oh, you're like a real life mermaid, and I consider myself a water fairy because.
Okay, I'm sorry.
No. And I like to say this because for me, the reason why I love scuba diving so much is because it reminds me of, I feel like I'm flying. Mm-hmm. It's a pseudo flying sensation for me.
You're like way up there in Blue
Cavern.
Right,
exactly. And so sometimes, so I'm actually not really a big like hiker because I'll go somewhere beautiful and I'll see a beautiful tree and I just really want to go up and look at that leaf that's at the very top. Mm-hmm. And I can't because I'm above water and not under it, and it's super disappointing. Definitely changes how you like take in nature. Mm-hmm. And so when I get to go into Blue Cavern, and I'm first on the bottom of the exhibit, talk to the kids on the bottom, and then just a little push and a kick, and now I'm at the bridge, and I get to like wave at the people that are on the bridge. Like, I actually feel like I am midair in the middle of the Great Hall.
That's so cool.
And that's a feeling that like the little 5-year-old in me just loves. And so that's my favorite part of the job, is that feeling that I get.
That's awesome. That's so cool. I'm surprised one of your favorite exhibits to dive in is one that's relatively chillier than a lot of our other exhibits, because that's a cold water habitat.
It is. Well, it's not the coldest. That's why I said I don't go into surge. Surge is like the 48, cold. Right? Yeah. 48 or 50. But Blue Cavern's about 50, between like 56 to 60. It usually fluctuates throughout the year.
Chilly.
It is chilly. It mimics what's actually happening in the open ocean right off our coast here.
Yeah.
But it's easier to acclimate in that in this 58 than I'd say than a 58 actually out in Catalina because the circular, for some reason, it's just, it doesn't stay so cold so long. But I can say that like there have been times where I've had to be a safety diver for some like event dive where they were in the water for like an hour or like neighbors.
The Blue Cavern exhibit is based off of a Blue Cavern dive site, right? And you said that's at Catalina?
Yeah.
And have you been there? Have you seen it?
Yes. Yeah.
How does it compare?
It's, you know, diving Blue Cavern in Catalina. So the real Blue Cavern dive site in Catalina is on the side that's facing the mainland.
Okay.
And it's near the isthmus, which is the skinny, skinny low part of the island.
Okay.
So if you're on the beach here, like in LA, and you're looking that way, it's going to be like on very much like basically a hair to the left side of the skinny little isthmus part. That's basically where Blue Cavern is, so you can look at it from the shore. It's a pretty deep dive, the cavern itself. And so you go down, I think you go down about like 85 to 90 feet.
Oh, wow.
All the way down. So it gets pretty like cold and dark down there. And when you're in California, 90 feet in Fiji feels like it could be 10 feet. Yeah. But 90 feet here in California feels like 900 feet.
Yeah.
So you get down 90 feet and there's this big hole in the rock. It's probably about the size of this room. It's a few car length. If you stacked maybe 4 cars on top of each other, they'd probably fit inside.
Okay.
And it's just like this big hole, and you get to go and swim into this hole, and it's creepy, and there's nothing really in there except for like Gorgonians except for like these big sea fans and stuff.
Cool.
blow your bubbles and come on right out.
Yeah.
Which actually does mimic what the Real Blue Cavern, our exhibit looks like, mm-hmm. kind of. So if you're looking at our exhibit in the far left corner, it looks like there's this dark hole. Mm-hmm. And that is kind of what the dark hole kind of looks like in Blue Cavern. My favorite part, though, about that dive in the open ocean, though, is because you and usually the group that you're with are in this hole for so long, you're blowing bubbles, blowing bubbles, blowing bubbles. Well, those bubbles get trapped up in this hole, mm-hmm. which is about 80 feet underwater. The cool part is that once you're done diving deep and you're going to finish your dive a little bit shallower, you come up on top of where this rocky hole was. And all of those bubbles that you had just blown out are now trying to find their way to the surface. Mm-hmm. So they find their way through tiny little cracks. Mm. And when you come up to do the rest of your dive in the shallow, sunnier, beautiful, you know, where there's all this kelp and sun and beautiful things, there's also a whole bunch of tiny little champagne bubbles that are coming up that are sparkling. And it feels like you're just diving through pixie dust.
That is so cool.
And that's what really makes the Blue Cavern dive magical, in my opinion.
That's so cool. That's amazing. Okay, well, you talked a little bit about, you know, you're getting into habitats here, and our entire dive team, including our volunteers, you're getting into habitats there. You're not just swimming. You're not just getting in there for funsies and, you know, just hanging out. What are you guys doing in there? What does a typical dive look like?
So we do a few different things. One of our big things that we do, so we do like four things. First thing is cleaning. Mm-hmm. We are constantly cleaning the exhibits. People ask like, oh, how often do you have to go in and clean algae? Every day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Every day. Mm-hmm. If we can get in there every day, I call it the war on algae because it will never end. And so we're constantly cleaning.
They're winning.
They're definitely winning, especially now it's summertime.
Yep.
Whew, they have. Mm-hmm. Restocked. So on the exhibits that get more sun during the summertime, those need to be cleaned twice as often. And we use hand scrubbing brushes, electric hand scrubbing brushes. We have also big power washer powered scrubbing brushes, which are super heavy and hardcore. So we do lots of scrubbing all the time. We also have even some like smaller brushes for like the nooks and crannies. We have to clean the windows constantly. Every single day, truthfully. And then another thing that we do is feed the animals. In a few of our exhibits, especially our big ones, our Tropical Reef and Blue Cavern, we hand feed the animals.
They're so spoiled.
They're so spoiled. Yeah, we just like feed on like a silver platter. Mm-hmm. No, I'm kidding. Basically, though, but truthfully, if we were to just throw all of the food at the surface of the water and let the animals come in and get it, some of our animals wouldn't get any food because just our faster, smaller, more agile animals will come up and get all the food. And truthfully, the bigger animals, like the grouper, wouldn't probably wind up getting a piece because they're just not very fast. Mm-hmm. They don't get their food from the surface of the water in the open ocean. Mm-hmm. So they'll just let their friends get this food from the surface of the ocean and they'll just get their friend later. So in order to prevent that from happening, we have divers that get in the water and hand feed those bigger, slower animals. Mm-hmm. We make sure that they get the appropriate amount of food. We document how many pieces that they got. If they had a specific type of medication that's put into a specific fish that they need to eat, we note that as well. So feeding happens every day here as well, whether it's in a couple different exhibits. Mm-hmm. So that's the second thing we do. Third thing we do is some of us do presentations underwater. So we do talk to our guests using an underwater full face mask and communication systems, giving underwater presentations for the Blue Cavern and Trop Reef. And then lastly, but probably our most important job that people don't know about, is to be the general observers of the exhibit. Mm-hmm. So even these big exhibits that have thousands of fish in them only have maybe two people that are really the aquarists that are in charge of that exhibit. Mm-hmm. So as, you know, 90 volunteer divers that are coming in every single week, they serve as 90 pairs of eyes to see if things are, quote unquote, not normal. Mm-hmm. And so it takes a while for those volunteers to know what normal looks like. It's usually pretty funky.
like,
but
this is,
you know,
normal?
I don't know how many people, you know, I like to ask people, how many people have a dog? How many people have a normal dog?
No one.
Zero. A normal cat. You know, you need to
spend. In this room, zero.
Exactly.
Speak for us.
You need to spend enough time with the animal to know what normal is.
Yeah.
So when they stop doing that one super weird thing that they always do, you know that that's not normal.
Mm-hmm.
And so the fish are the exact same way. Mm-hmm. They have so much personality individually. Different animals of the same exact species behave very differently. Mm-hmm. I never knew. I grew up with a fish tank forever, but I never really knew how much a fish is like your cat or your dog or your bird or something. Mm-hmm. Hardcore personalities. Mm-hmm. And so knowing what normal looks like and documenting that, mm-hmm. if we see something that appears to be off, because once it becomes obvious that something's off, say if like an animal's changing color or something, mm-hmm. or isn't happy, or it's just if it's very obvious, then usually it's bad news. So yeah. we try to find it when it's not so obvious, which is usually yeah. behavioral change.
So the dive team is so a part of our husbandry team as well. You guys are so intertwined because mm-hmm. you are observing the animals from right in their face, right mm-hmm. underwater. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think it's really fascinating too, getting to see like an exhibit like Tropical Reef, where there's over 1,000 animals. It's 350,000 gallons. It's our largest exhibit. There's some animals that are target trained and fed by our aquarists at the top. But at the same time, there's so much choreography underwater mm-hmm. that you guys are doing scatter feeds and you guys are feeding individual animals, hand feeding like our stingrays under there. I just think it's so cool that, you know, we're all able to work together for the health and safety of yeah. our incredible animals.
We call it coordinated chaos.
That's like, it's beautiful to watch yeah, too. No. And you guys make it look, you make it look so seamless. Like, as you know, if you go to a dive show here at the aquarium, they happen daily in our Honda Blue Cavern and Tropical Reef exhibits. It is so seamless. And I know there's so much work that goes into it to make it seamless. And probably to you, like, if you only knew.
If you only knew.
If you only knew. But you guys are so caring about the animals. And we're so lucky to have, you know, volunteers, people who volunteer their time to get in there and do hard work. Yeah. It's like I said, they're not just in there swimming, as much as fun as that would be. But those yeah. animals require constant care and constant cleaning.
You know, some of the hardest work is really, like, I love our mission statement so mm-hmm. much, to instill a sense of wonder, respect, and stewardship for the Pacific Ocean, its mm-hmm. inhabitants, and ecosystems. And it's some of the hardest work for us is remembering that mission statement and making sure that we are teaching appropriate stewardship of our animals mm-hmm. and our environment. Mm-hmm. It's a big thing for us divers, and what the Aquarium of the Pacific believes in is teaching good stewardship. You know, that can come off a little, I have to explain that to mm-hmm. some volunteers, because they might think that, you know, they're trying to convince one of the guests that this leopard shark isn't going to bite them. Mm-hmm. So they're in that effort, they might try to pet the shark mm-hmm. or rub it on its belly or, mm-hmm. you know, do something that makes the shark seem less scary mm-hmm. to show the guest. Instead of trying to do things like that, we have to not do those mm-hmm. things. We have to actually show the animal the respect that it deserves mm-hmm. and show the guests that that's not something that's appropriate to do. Mm-hmm. We want you to fall in love with the shark and not think it's scary, but we also don't want you hugging the shark yeah. because mm-hmm. we don't want you going
to respect it.
Exactly, yeah. you know? And so even when it comes to, like, how we are diving around the coral, mm-hmm. you know, we want to make sure that we're not putting our knees on the coral mm-hmm. or, you know, on the rock work, or we're not grabbing a coral head when we're moving ourselves around. I mean, the secret info is in a lot of our diveable exhibits, all the coral is artificial. Mm-hmm. But we have to make sure that we're showing the guests mm-hmm. how would you normally behave if yeah. this wasn't artificial. Yeah. And again, in a jacuzzi, that can be really hard.
Blowing yeah. around.
That's something I've never considered before. Yeah, I've never gone to a dive show and seen you guys sitting on a piece of coral or, you know, kind of hanging off of it. And, like, that would be probably very fun to do. But, yeah, you're right. It's stewardship. You don't want to show someone, this is supposed to mimic an open water right. ocean habitat. You wouldn't do that in the wild, so we wouldn't do that here.
Right. People don't mm-hmm. watch other people in the ocean. People don't, yeah. you know, when you were watching all of our fun documentary videos these mm-hmm. days, you know, when you were watching a video about Hawaii, you were usually not watching people snorkeling mm-hmm. or watching people diving in the water. And mm-hmm. so people don't know how they're supposed to interact mm-hmm. with the environment itself, not just the animals, just the environment itself. Mm-hmm. And so I think that that's kind of an important thing that we have to remind our volunteers often, is, you know, just to think about it from the perspective of our guests and some of our guest members that maybe don't have as much yeah. of a relationship with yeah. the ocean and are trying to find that relationship. So
I think I love dive culture so much is about leaving things as they are, or, you know, if there's trash, picking it up and mm-hmm. making things better for the ocean. And it's so much about that sort of mutual respect that you have with the ocean and its inhabitants and ecosystems, and just making sure you're not disrupting the processes that right. are going on. That being said, our animals here at the aquarium don't know that that's what you're doing. And so do you ever end up with any weird animal interactions on their end coming up to you?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Please tell.
Oh, gosh. Let's see. Well, I
you're
can
like,
say
today.
Today. Right. Yes, today. Probably our is our green sea turtle in our tropical reef exhibit.
Is this Copper?
Is this Copper?
Is Adam talked about him in the past episode.
He's a celebrity already.
Yeah, Copper is a celebrity.
He really is.
He's a troublemaker, right?
He's got so much personality. It's great. He likes to really get in our personal space as divers. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're usually, when you see a turtle, you're like, oh, how cute. Let me be within 10 feet of you. Mm-hmm. Let me just be near you. You know, yeah. And now these guys, you'll be trying to put your fins on in the water and this green sea turtle will
He's
come
like,
up.
He's like, ooh, a human. And, like, let me be near you.
Just his face opens right in front of yours in the water. And it's, again, and it's tempting to not want to just hug him because he's right there.
Of
but
course.
Again, respectfully, mm-hmm. he needs respectful of your space as
well.
He needs
to practice some stewardship with the humans as well.
He's really getting roasted on this podcast.
I know. No, I swear he just loves the attention.
That sort of leads us to one of our social media questions that we've had is, do the animals ever go towards the entrance or exits of the water when you're diving in there because they know people come in and out of those spaces? Sounds like Copper maybe does.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Most of the animals, when we're going in the water, they come towards us. The only one the only ones that don't are noticeably the sharks.
Mm.
Sharks really don't want anything to do with us. I like to say that sharks, their behavior very much resembles a feral cat. And I say that because there's lots of feral cats around here at the jetty, at the aquarium.
Yeah, that's true.
And so, you know, like when you see a feral cat.
And they just bolt.
You take one step towards it because you're like, oh, kitty. Yeah. And it's just gone.
Yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. But then like 2 minutes later, you look to your left-hand side and it's staring at you the whole time. And you're like, wait, you were over there. How are you there? And then you take another step towards it and then it's gone.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like that is very much, in my opinion, like shark energy. It's like they are very curious and they want to know what you're doing. So they will hang out. But the second you start kind of showing any interest in them, they're out. They're super
Very
out.
Fascinating.
So it's like that same kind of curious, strong energy as a little aristocrat.
I love that. We actually had another question about diving with sharks. We talked to Rachel Munson about, you know, diving with sharks inside of Shark Lagoon. And how, you know, that's something that people probably ask you a lot about. Like, do you dive with sharks? Isn't that terrifying?
It's the most boring dive that we do. I swear it is by far the most boring dive.
These are all staying so far away.
All of
from
our
you.
Dive volunteers are like, I want to dive Shark Lagoon. I want to get Shark Lagoon certified. I want to dive Shark Lagoon. And then they do, and they're like, that's like, it's super boring. I'm like, I told you, it's the most boring dive that we do because they don't want nothing to do with you.
Yeah.
And then we're in there and we have our sticks. We have like little sticks there. Just
your shark bouncers.
Just shark case. Bouncers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Got some sweet zebra sharks in there.
They're
just
so
kind of hanging out. Fern's the cutest.
Like, hey, Rachel. See ya.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So, yeah, no, the Shark Lagoon tank is very, it's really, really mellow. We used to be able to hand feed the leopard sharks in Blue Cavern,
cute.
Which was fun. And we hand feed them because of their mouth shape is meant to crush, like it's like crushing plates. They're not like serrated teeth.
Mm.
And so it's kind of like, because they eat like clams and stuff and their mouth is on the bottom of their body. And so we would just like hold up a clam cupped in our hand and they would just like eat it out of our hand like kibble. That was super fun. They really gave me some like puppy vibes when we did that.
They do have kind of a puppy face. Too.
Yeah,
very
they
round.
Do.
Very cute.
They do.
I had another question about a specific animal that I hear a lot about. It's kind of famous. I want to talk about Bubbles, the batfish.
Bubbles, the batfish. Right? Yes. Mm-hmm. Batfish, or also called a golden spadefish.
Mm-hmm.
Bubbles is wonderful. He's got the most personality of all. And so what happens is we get in the – so Bubbles has been there for at least 15 years, I'm pretty sure.
Wow.
And so he's been for a long time. And when divers are in the water and they're relatively relaxed in the big main window in their tropical reef exhibit, this big spadefish will come over and start trying to eat the bubbles that you're exhaling.
It's really cute.
It's really cute. And if you haven't really given him a good, you know, purge of bubbles in a while, he'll kind of start to, like, peck or like nip at your hairline, right? Which is usually, which is covered by a hood, mm-hmm. but he just kind of like feel pecks it. At the top, like, and you can feel
on,
it.
Come on, bubble
time.
It's bubble time. He's like, come on, man. Yeah. Come on. And so, but it's really, it's a really good sign though when mm-hmm. Bubbles comes over. A lot of times we'll have brand new divers that we're doing like an exhibit checkout for, mm-hmm. and I know that someone is definitely passing when Bubbles comes over and starts trying to eat their bubbles, because it doesn't happen to new divers very often, mm-hmm. because you have to be relaxed. Mm-hmm. It's like he can like feel whether you're...
Those are the good yeah, bubbles.
Those you're are the good bubbles. It's right. Those are the good bubbles. And so then when a new diver's getting checked out, if Bubbles comes over and, you know, mm-hmm. eats his bubbles, I'm like, okay, this guy's pretty
Bubble
relaxed.
Does his check off too.
Yes. That's exactly what happens.
Yeah, he just bubbles, goes over you. And checks
it's
a little
so
box.
Cute. What's crazy is we have like, I think like 6 batfish, all yeah, of the same species, mm-hmm. and none of them do it except for him. That one fish Bubbles.
So he knows fun. What he
so,
likes.
I think it must have something to do with like, it just feels good on his gills, because the bubbles go in his mouth and over his gills.
I think people would be surprised to know about the kind of the personality of fish. You know, you don't think of fish as something really with a personality, but I've learned so much here about different animals. Are there any other fun stories that you've had about maybe fish in particular or any other animals inside of our habitats?
Oh, gosh.
Just standouts.
I think the eagle rays have been a big standout for me.
They're big in size and yeah. big in standout.
Big in size, mm-hmm. exactly, in both, because mm-hmm. they came to our aquarium. They were probably about maybe like a foot and a half in length, mm-hmm. I remember, when we first started feeding. There was a
so
male
small.
And a female. Mm-hmm. And now they're how many feet?
I think like 6 or 8.
Like 100, probably.
Yeah,
like,
they're
huge. So big.
Yeah, yeah, like 5 or 6 mm-hmm. foot wingspan now. Mm-hmm. I know their tail is 9 feet. Mm-hmm. And just to see how quickly that ray has grown mm-hmm. in the past 3 years, I guess.
Years, yeah,
yeah
mm-hmm.
I guess it has been that many years. Yeah. But mm-hmm. still, you know, in the last huge. Several years. Mm-hmm. And the fun part is we got to hand feed them for a period mm-hmm. of time. And there was this like training behavior that they had to touch this purple cone before they were presented with the piece of clam, mm-hmm. which is interesting because I couldn't show him the clam before he touched yeah. the cone. Like, he has to touch the cone mm-hmm. in order to get the clam. So we called ourselves the human gumball machine, because you really had to think about yourself. Like, mm-hmm. like, you don't get the gumball until you put the coin in and turn the dial.
Yep.
Okay. And so the eagle rays were really a fun, they were just, it's from a personality aspect, it was just kind of fun to watch this animal grow up and figure itself out. Like, in the same way that like a little kid is like learning how to run the correct mm-hmm. way, or learning how to put on his jacket in the right way or something, or just even so much as like going down to tie your shoes, but just the kind of fumbling that animals do as mm-hmm. when they're younger, when they're trying to figure out how they're going to grow into their size. It was really interesting to see that in a ray, a fish, mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm. you don't see that so much in like insects or things that
sure.
you see that are
mm-hmm.
very much just innate instinct.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, things that don't have a mothering period, mm-hmm, you know, like, mm-hmm. like eagle rays don't have a mothering period. Mm-hmm. They're born, you
ready
know,
to go.
Ready mm-hmm. to go.
Figure
right.
Mm-hmm.
But they still have to figure it out on their own.
Yeah.
They aren't like pre-programmed mm-hmm. to know
yeah.
how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And so just to see that like juvenile learning state mm-hmm. develop mm-hmm. and it's normal of a cat and a dog. I wouldn't think anything of it, a cat and
yeah.
a dog, but it was really special to see that in this cartilaginous,
mm-hmm.
flat shark fish thing with pretty spots.
They are very pretty. They are very pretty. So we were talking about our volunteer divers. Can you talk a little bit about that program?
Yeah. So our volunteer dive program, it's super great. It's a big time commitment. It is one 4 to 5 hour shift every week for a minimum of 1 year, for about 75% of the year. So if you are a scuba diver and you want to come dive at the aquarium and you got some time, maybe do you have like Wednesday afternoons?
Mm-hmm.
Do you have Friday afternoons? How about Saturday mornings?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the day that you come in. And so you'll get assigned to a team you come in every week on that same team. So I've got like a Monday afternoon team that's all been here for many years,
mm-hmm.
and they're all just like super good buddies and friends.
Mm-hmm.
And so they come in every Monday for about 70% of the year, and they just go diving. They do the underwater presentations, they do the underwater cleaning, the feedings, and the observations. And so they're basically doing everything here. A minimum age in order to do this is 18.
Mm-hmm.
So you do need to be 18. You do have to be a rescue diver. So I said earlier there was
mm-hmm.
the open water advanced rescue. So it's mm-hmm. the third level rescue diver. You do need to have your first aid CPR and AED certification, as well as your emergency O2, which is all usually things that you get when you get your rescue certification mm-hmm. as well. And you need to have 50 logged dives. Mm-hmm. So those are all the minimum requirements in order to apply for the program. Mm-hmm. Mainly just because you're diving so much, we need you to be of a certain you know, safety level. Mm-hmm. And so then what you do is you apply online. If you do have those things, or at least at minimum, if you've got your rescue certification, 50 log dives, sign up. You can sign up online. Mm-hmm. You can go to aquariumvolunteers.org and check out the the adult volunteer opportunities. And the applications are open right now. They're not open most mm-hmm. of the year. Mm-hmm. And so they just opened on June 1st. And they're going to be open for a few months this summer.
Cool. Nice.
And so we are accepting dive volunteers right now. Awesome. And eager to get some more people in. It's a lot of time. It's a lot of training. It's a lot of work. It's the most demanding volunteer job I've ever heard of.
Yeah.
But it is also the most rewarding.
Yeah, they're always so happy when I see them around. They are like the nicest people always. And they're like, I just got out of pin pads. I'm going up for a shower. Then I'm getting in blue cat. You know, like it's mm-hmm. always just mm-hmm. the most fun sounding day too. And they're in the best moods.
Yep.
And I think it's just they love being in the water so much. Yep. That it...
There's really a sense of community there too, I think, because I'll go up to the dive locker and there's a potluck happening and they're all like around and they're all hanging out.
Like, I made fudge.
I'll be doing a behind the scenes tour and it's volunteer divers and I have, you know, guests with me. And I'm like, hi, everybody. These are our volunteer divers. And everybody says hi. Everybody's like talking to my guests and just making them feel so welcomed in that space. I just think it's so cool. So we had a really amazing group of volunteers. Yeah. It's really awesome. And they're so eager to talk about what they do. Like, they help so much with our marketing efforts. And, you know, they're here on their own time. It's really special.
Right. Some of them drive super far. Mm-hmm. Some of them have a commute of over 2 hours, two mm-hmm. or 3 hours to come every single week. Wow. Mm-hmm. Every week there and then back again.
So awesome. Shout out to all of our volunteers.
Shout out to our volunteers. So one of the social media questions that we got was, can you talk while underwater? And if not, how do you communicate with other divers while you're in the water?
Good question. We can talk, but our talking is limited to only the person on the dry side of the tank with a microphone. Mm-hmm. We cannot talk to each other underwater, unfortunately. So our, you know, Bluetooth actually does not work underwater either. And so,
really?
And you know, it doesn't, I believe that there's kind of this like rudimentary version of it with some kind of underwater comms. Mm-hmm. I think there's some more commercial diving aspects to do it, but we don't. Our communication line is a hard line that goes straight from the mask up to the surface. Mm-hmm. We wear a full face mask and there's a little microphone inside the nasal mouthpiece area. And so we hardline that to the top, and then we can talk to somebody on a microphone on the other side, which is – it's pretty interesting because when we're trying to talk to that person on their side, we have to make sure that they're not asking us a question at the same time that we're taking an inhale because it's loud.
So much to think about.
Mm-hmm. Breathing is loud underwater, mm-hmm. you know. And so breathing out bubbles and taking the air into – you know, out from the tank into your body or blowing out the bubbles, it's loud. And so you have to kind of time your breathing mm-hmm. correctly to when this person's going to be talking. So that's why we don't do too much communicate. That's why we don't do any communicating with each other underwater. Mm-hmm. When it comes to trying to communicate with each other underwater, we have hand signals, which are, most of them are just the generic dive industry hand signals mm-hmm. that you learn in your open water classes. But sometimes we like to make up new ones. That's kind of one of the fun parts of diving is when you're planning your dive, sitting back and be like, okay, so what are we going to be talking, what are we going to need to talk about underwater? Mm-hmm. And therefore, what are some hand signs that we can do? Like, for example, just this last week, me and one of the Trop Reef Aquarius Celeste went in the exhibit to take some photos for a feeding training binder. Mm-hmm. And so I was like her little model and she mm-hmm. had to take pictures of me. And I wasn't sure she was taking two shots. One was how the position is supposed to be mm-hmm. and one how the position is
like
not supposed to be.
Yeah.
Like a no, like a yes and a no,
and a
right?
Don't. Yeah.
A do and a
mm-hmm.
don't. There it is. And so we had hand signals for a do and a don't. Mm-hmm. And our like don't hand signal was like an upside down okay sign. Mm-hmm. And our like this is the good shot was a the sign you do for money.
Money.
Because it's the money shot.
Rubbing bills in between your hands.
Yeah, yeah, running bills shot. Between yes. your hands. Uh-huh. And so that was the money shot. So that was the hand sign. We just used it just for that dive. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then so when we were under there, though, when we were all done and we wrapped it all up, we all started making it rain, though. Yeah. Making it rain. That was a little
hand sign. We got the money
sign.
Shot. Let's make it rain.
Money shot, mm-hmm. make it rain. That's, so that's kind amazing. Of a new funny one.
That's really fun.
But there's tons of ones.
There's a whole language of communication underwater with yes. your hands, right?
Yes.
I think the hardest barrier for entry for me was that I kept putting a thumbs up every time something. I was like, yeah, yeah. my regulator's working. Yeah, I'm doing great. Uh-huh. And my friend who was teaching me to dive, like, yanked me out. Of, we were like 3 feet underwater. Yanked me out of the water and was like, stop doing that.
Don't
that
give means a thumbs
go
up.
To the surface. Yeah. And I was like, ugh. And so I like never did the okay sign. My dad always does an okay uh-huh. sign. And I just associated it with like my dorky dad. And I was like, I'm not doing that.
It's
okay.
true.
But
it's
then
very
I had
true.
To change it from a thumbs up to an okay sign, because if you do a thumbs up, that means go to the surface, which uh-huh. is a very specific signal. Yeah.
I totally catch myself doing that too, because I'll do photos with our dive team, and when I get the shot, I give a thumbs up, and then like I'm like, but I'm not. No, don't listen to me with that.
Down.
Yeah, exactly.
Stay
you
down.
Know,
do
if you're trying to tell a diver without telling them that that was like awesome mm-hmm. or good or cool or yay. Give them a hang 10 sign.
Ooh, okay.
A shaka.
Shaka. Okay. Shaka. Shaka. Right. A shaka.
There we go. So cool. One of my favorite things to witness as an employee is the interactions between our divers and our guests.
It's cute.
They play rock, paper, scissors. They give high fives. They blow water bubble kisses. Yeah. It is so amazing. Can you talk about the interaction you've had with their guests?
Oh, gosh. That's so fun. Yeah. We can see the guests just as well as they can see us, mm-hmm. which I think is fun. I mean, the glass, I think, is like between like 5 to 9 inches thick. But we can see. We can't hear mm-hmm. on the other side of the glass too mm-hmm. much. But we can definitely see it. And rock, paper, scissors is always so much fun. Mm-hmm. I think the most fun is seeing the look, not only just the look on the kids' faces, but the look on the adults' faces mm-hmm. and how similar in wonder they are.
It is really.
It's really mm-hmm. cool because, you it know, the adults get this just this charge of energy mm-hmm. sometimes when their eyes just light up when they look at you and they're so excited. But mm-hmm. they're genuinely excited for themselves, not just excited for their kids, yeah. for the kid to see the diver. And so that's a fun thing for me because I've done some odd jobs in the years and, you know, being a princess character at birthday parties yeah. was something I odd jobbed. And let me tell you, no one has ever been more excited to see a scuba diver.
Forget yeah. princesses.
You know, yeah. forget princesses. Mm-hmm. It's all about the scuba divers. And mm-hmm. so that's been really fun to see that kind of that wonder, so excitement, cool. amazement out of adults and kids mm-hmm. when you're under there. And so we can see you just as well. We love to do rock, paper, scissors. We like just like staring at the kids because mm-hmm. they're just staring at mm-hmm. us. Mm-hmm. Just like, because you can see they're thinking like, are you a real person? Mm-hmm. Like, who are you? Do you actually see
how
me?
How are you breathing?
What are you like? Yeah. How are you breathing? They're just staring at you trying to figure it out. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes I just like to stare back just trying to figure them out.
I do.
You
That's
know?
So cool.
I give some cross eyes a little bit. Or, you know, a lot of times I like to go upside down,
That's so cool.
which is mm-hmm. kind of fun too. And so just, you know, just being animated, having
fun. It's so inspiring too because I think when you're a kid, you see that and you're like, oh, that's a person. That's a job. I could maybe do that. That's yes. something I could maybe do one day. Maybe even an adult too, just realizing like, oh, you can do that. There's opportunities to do something like that.
Right. It's that wonder, right? Mm-hmm. That instilling that sense of wonder,
like becoming
right?
becoming an astronaut, you know, like yes. it's you're seeing, you're wearing a suit and you're in a space where gravity is kind of weird.
Right.
Floating around.
Yeah.
It's very much, yeah, mm-hmm. it's very much like watching, yeah, like watching like a real life astronaut mm-hmm. do it. It's, you know, you almost wish, so often you wish that you could just like pull them right into the water with you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the hard part. It's hard to say goodbye.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's
just
usually,
stay down there.
It's always, it's always hard to say goodbye. Yeah. You just want to stay down there and wave and high five and just like, you really wish that you could just get to know these people mm-hmm. a little bit more when you're looking at them.
If I had 5 more minutes.
Exactly. 5 minutes. You know, one of my like dreams has always been, you know, because I just think about like random cool things. Wouldn't it be cool if we all had communication lines and there is like a red mask and a blue mask and a yellow mask and you could press a button and talk to the red mask diver or the blue mask diver? These are Rachel fantasies.
That's so cool. Get on that, Madeline.
I will do my best.
You know, I don't know. Just if there is a way that I could just, I don't know, or sometimes I just wish that I could just like dry off real quick and run down and see everybody and do some kind of meet and greet.
That was me in there.
That was me. I'm a real person. Mm-hmm. You know?
They're like, no, that's not you.
One of the funniest things I've ever seen was when I was watching some divers and there was these, there was a couple of little old ladies. They're having this conversation whether the divers are real or not. Mm-hmm. And she's like, I'm not sure I think they're real. I'm not sure. And her friend was like, those are real people. Those are robots. And
so certain.
Yeah, so certain. She convinced her friend, didn't just like thank herself, completely convinced her friend that she was ridiculous for thinking that they were real people. The that they're definitely robots.
That we could afford 50 underwater robots that look and act just like real people and clean and do all these things.
Of us. Yeah, our technology that
right?
we have here.
We are killing it. So many underwater robots.
I get that sometimes. Some people will comment on our TikToks and say, this sea lion CGI. No way does it look like that.
Yeah.
I'm like, you must think I'm adding that to my resume. Yeah. You must think I'm so talented that I can CGI.
It's usually like the facial expressions that they're trying to do like a smile or a tongue, and people are like, that's fake. And you're like, why? How would I have faked that? That is
the world we live in, right? A lot of trust in my talent, if you think you can do
but
that.
In a world where deepfakes and AI and all these things are happening,
stay suspicious.
I'm just going to deepfake a robot into Rachel, and then it'll be very confusing.
I just have a vision of Rachel doing the robot in her scuba outfit.
And then make a TikTok about it. There we go.
This can happen.
Underwater, you should do the robot.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect.
Amazing.
Well, I think that we have your next TikTok idea.
I think, speaking of TikToks, Rachel has hosted some live TikToks while diving. And they are so much fun to do. But so many people, going back to kind of like taking your breaths at the right time and everything, there's so many people where I have to remind them in the comments or Rachel and I will be speaking while she's underwater and I'm in an area above. I was gonna say it's kind of like a closet that we huddle into, and I'm on my laptop, my personal AOP closet, and I have to tell people like, Rachel's fine, everybody, she's breathing underwater, so she's gonna take moments where she's breathing and you hear it and it kind of sounds like, is she okay, is she all right? It's like, yeah, she's doing great. I'm like, Rachel, you doing good in there? She's like, yep, doing great. Yeah. Those are really, really fun to do.
Yeah,
I have to do one soon.
Yeah, that was so much fun. One of the highlights of working here so far, actually, has been doing that TikTok live underwater, especially because that was the first time I had done an underwater presentation since before COVID.
Aww.
So I was definitely out of breath.
It's a lot to talk and dive at the same time and focus
lot.
On your breathing.
It's
and
a
they're
lot.
40 minutes long minimum, so those live streams. So.
What a lot of people don't understand, too, is that with diving, you're actually like swimming with your breath.
Mm-hmm.
So by using your lung volume, I mean, your lung volume is a lot of air, and a full breath of air can make you float, and a without any can make you sink. And that's what we actually use to keep good buoyancy underwater while we're diving. And so to talk, you don't really have control over that. And so your buoyancy just kind of gets like all around. The grouper almost ate the GoPro.
Yeah, I forgot about that. I'm going to put that in the show notes too. There's a really fun video of the grouper just going for it.
Yeah. He's like, this is the grouper, here's it. And he's just like, you see the inside of his gill breakers. And I'm like, oop.
It was so cool. Like, that grouper is a paid actor.
You're like, we all saw the inside of our grouper today.
Yeah, it was
fun
awesome.
For us.
That's going to
okay,
charity.
Our last question is, I think some people don't realize that fish have teeth.
Mm-hmm.
Or are capable of kind of nibbling. Mm-hmm. Does that happen ever?
Yeah, the nibblers of the exhibits are usually the smallest animals in the exhibits. The small, and they're in quite a few of the exhibits up in the tropical reef. They're the small black damselfish, or I think they're called white spotted damsels.
Mm-hmm.
They're maybe like the size of a baseball. Like they're like the roundness of a baseball. They're super small.
Mm-hmm.
And they are territorial. They're kind of like a Garibaldi, the same kind of species as a Garibaldi. So they're territorial of a certain area.
Mm-hmm.
So if like you are trying to scrub a rock and you have your hand on another rock, which you're trying to like gain for just holding onto for leverage, they'll come over and they'll kind of like peck at your finger.
That's my rock.
And they kind of just like peck at your finger, which it doesn't hurt, but man, it'll make you jump out of your seat.
Startle you, I'm sure.
It's very startling. So those are the only ones that actually like will necessarily like eat you or try to, you know, eat at you. We do all have to wear gloves and hoods, though, because we have to cover our fingertips and our ears as well, because both of those, if just a little bit of it is exposed, it looks like a piece of clam, and a lot of the animals
Delicious.
Eat clam. And so, but yeah, they, you know, the they only ever really nibble on you when you're feeding, like during feeding time, or if
they're associating it with food.
Yeah. You know, it's totally a food thing.
I know you got food.
It's a food thing, or a little bit of a, hey, that's my rock. Mm-hmm. You
know? Get your own rock. Cool. Well, thank you so much for joining us on our podcast.
Yeah.
That was really
so
important. I know I learned so much, and I can't wait to get in the water.
Aquarium of the Podcific is brought to you by Aquarium of the Pacific, a 501c3 nonprofit organization. In 2023, the Aquarium celebrates 25 years of connecting millions of people worldwide to the beauty and wonder of our ocean planet. Head to aquariumofpacific.org to learn more about our 25th anniversary celebration. Keep up with the Aquarium on social media at Aquarium Pacific on TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn.
This podcast is produced by Aaron Lundy, Madeline Walden, and Scott Shaw. Our music is by Andrew Reitzma, and our podcast art is by Brandy Kenny. Special thanks to Cecile Fisher, Anitza Valles, and our audiovisual and education departments, and to all of our amazing podcast guests for taking time out of their day to talk about the important work that they do. Podcific wouldn't be possible without the support of the Aquarium's donors, members, guests, and supporters. Thanks for listening.